This is Living Real Radio. Real issues in real time with your host, John Angotti and Greg Walton. Living Real Radio is brought to you by Closets by Design. Imagine your home totally organized. Call them today for a free in-home consultation at 615-261-8700. That's 615-261-8700.
Welcome to Living Real. Greg Walton here with John Angotti. And our guest is Ann Kurtz-Kernian. And Ann has a master's degree in theology, a degree in environmental engineering, and is a greeting card founder, owner of Cards by Ann, which is an international company. It does hand calligraphy with philosophical and spiritual messages. But what we're really excited about here is to have you on, Ann, to focus on neuroscience and spirituality, because you're also a speaker and an author and a practice leader, really, in this, you know, in spirituality. You have a book with Loyola Press, Spiritual Practices for the Brain. So you look at that intersection of neuroscience and prayer. And so really fascinating. Welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, Greg. Yeah, I'm so excited to share this information with your audience, because there's so many practices that our spiritual tradition has in its history that neuroscience and positive psychology also recommend for our mental health, for our physical health, for our overall well-being. So it's really exciting to share these insights with everyone.
Yeah, so you started off as an environmental engineer. So, like, how did you go from that into this, you know?
Yeah, well, that could take an hour, but I'll give you the short version. I was really going to be a missionary in Latin America with the Marinol Sisters. And so, as a lay missioner, and I was on track to do that. And that's why I wanted to get an environmental engineering degree. I always liked math and science. I met my husband 6 months before I was supposed to go, before I graduated. And so I wound up switching gears. I never intended to be an engineer in the United States. So I was an engineer for about a year. And then my husband and I both quit our engineering jobs, took up ministry in a church in Pittsburgh while we worked on our master's degrees. And mine was in theology, his was in education. So he became a physics teacher, and I became I started my greeting card company as I was working with the church, designing cards and other things for the parish and other communities. And then it just blossomed from there. That was in the early to mid 80s. So it's been a while.
Wow. Yeah. Awesome. And you and John have been friends a while.
Yeah, yep. I've known John since we were about 3 years old now.
Yeah, something like that.
Feels like that. We used to see each other at all the conferences around the country.
Yeah. And being from the same part of the country.
Yes. John's from West Virginia. I'm from Pittsburgh. Well, I'm not originally from Pittsburgh, but in the past 45 years I've lived in Pittsburgh. Yeah. So
yeah. We carry that in common.
Yeah.
But that's a unique way to come around to doing what you're doing to get to this book. And, you know, you think about God's plan that you didn't even see coming right at you.
You know, I was torn when Jack and I got together. I was so torn about what to do, because I had committed to the Marinol Lay Missioners that I would go to Chile with my best friend. And I went to a dear friend who was a priest, still is, wonderful man. And I said, he was just a few years older than me. And I said, I am so torn. I do not know what to do. And his advice has stuck with me to this day. He said, Ann, God wants you to be happy. You need to find whatever ministry you're called to, but God wants you to be happy. And as when I walked out of his office, I thought, I know I will be very happy with Jack. And he said he would wait for me for 3 years, but I thought, that's just such a long time. And so I figured out that God would lead me to a ministry somehow. I didn't know what it was going to be at the time, but I just thought, I just need to be open. And here we are. And I pinch myself because I absolutely love what I do. And it's this ministry that has flourished. And I just feel like I just get out of God's way, you know, just do my best and get out of the way and things will happen.
Mm-hmm. What's great is I just kind of love that you kind of come from the sciencey background, right? Because you're about spirituality and science and that intersection, you know, that crossover.
And my theology professors always ask me, why are you here? And what are you going to do with that science degree? I said, I don't know. I'll figure it out. Because when I got my degree in theology, I finished it in 1990. That was the year that fMRI machines were discovered. And only at that time did the brain science begin to coordinate with the spiritual practices. So it was really at the very beginning. And so I wasn't able to study that when I was doing theology, in school, because those machines weren't even invented yet. But now, with all this, I've been studying the neuroscience since 2008. So many discoveries have been made in how much these practices help our brains and our bodies.
So what has that uncovered?
Well, the main thing is, we have this great history of Christian meditation leading back to Jesus's time. He said, do not worry, enter into your inner room, etc. And then you go through the history of the, desert fathers and mothers, and Julian of Norwich, and the cloud of unknowing, and all these are in the second chapter of my book, so I don't want to get into too much detail. But what we've found is the neuroscience tells us that these, just sitting for 12 or 13 minutes a day, focusing on a sacred word or your breath, that will create changes in your brain. You will protect the end caps of your chromosomes so that premature aging will not take place. You will actually create more wrinkly cortex, which means that your brain can focus better, can concentrate better, your inflammation goes down, your immunity goes up. So all of these great effects of just meditating for 12 or 13 minutes a day. And the US Army uses these techniques, taught by Amishi Jha from University of Miami. We know that not even you don't if we could all take this pill, we would be taking it. I tell people that all the time. If this was just a pill, every single doctor everywhere would be prescribing this pill, because it has so many good effects on our bodies and our brains. And if you want to keep dementia at bay, if you want to reduce your possibility of getting Alzheimer's, all of these are helped by beginning a meditation practice.
I need that book today.
Yeah, we do. I need help with my focus.
I never really thought about it, you know, how to help you with those other things that it does.
And so, certainly we want to develop our spiritual lives. And it's often when I'm sitting in prayer like this, I get flashes of inspiration because I am just sitting still in God's presence. And that's often when inspiration comes. And if we don't allow space in our lives for those ideas to pop in, we're not maximizing the gifts that God's given us.
That brings just to mind the need for silence, like in the mass.
Oh, yes.
Where
Yes.
God speaks back, you know, you talk about being inspired with everything happening so much. It's hard to listen back in silence, right? You know, because everything's, we move along and doing all this stuff without the silence to either it was either Richard Rohr or somebody's made this statement that sometimes the soul has to catch up to the, you know, what's happening, you know.
And there's several teachers like James Findlay and Merton and others who really talk about begin small, and also there are contemplative practices. So, for instance, every morning when I get up, instead of sitting on the couch, which I'm not a great sitter, I take a 20 to 30 minute meditative walk. And I just continue to just look at the trees, listen to the birds, not to think about anything, but just being in creation. I happen to live near woods, being in creation, and just being grateful for all the gifts that God has given us in this world, and just walking slowly. So that can be a practice. Father Don Grayson says anything that slows us down is a spiritual practice. So what do we do? Maybe for you, it's baking bread, maybe being a contemplative photographer, maybe gardening. We do need to do that 12 to 13 minutes, though, of just stillness and silence for those brain effects to occur.
And it's in succession. It's not like I'm gonna do 3 minutes here, three
Yes,
minutes here.
it has to be a chunk. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, Brother Lawrence, who's one of my favorite contemplative teachers who lived in the 1600s, he says the practice of the presence of God is one of the most essential things we can do. And I always think when I was a little girl, my mom sent my brother and me off to our Catholic school saying, Angel of God, my guardian dear, to whom God's love. And I always thought about this angel sitting on my shoulder as I walked the several blocks to school. And Brother Lawrence tells us, God is that close to us all the time if we just remember. So it doesn't mean that you only do that 12 minutes, but you can start out small for with just 2 minutes. But what it will do is generate this awareness of God's presence with us all throughout our day so that our entire day can actually be one big moment of prayer.
Yeah, I agree. You know that when you become conscious of that, it's like you never stop praying. Because
Yes. You make your coffee in the morning and it's a prayer. When you wash your clothes, when I talk about cleaning as a spiritual practice, I love the end result. So just taking in the scent of the smells as you're wiping down a counter, all of these can be meditative prayer times for us.
yeah. So anybody out there that's, somebody comes up to you and says, are you talking to yourself? You say, no, I'm talking to God.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. And
Yeah.
often the one thing that people often tell me when I teach about meditation is, I'm just not a good meditator. My mind keeps going. And what I tell them is, welcome to the club. That's the human condition. But it's just like riding a bike or learning to type or any new skill, learning the guitar or the piano. You need to practice it. And the more we practice it, the better we get. But it may take decades. It may take years, but the whole thing is we practice and we just keep returning to God as we remember, as we're sitting down, we try to let go of thoughts, return to God's presence, let go of thoughts, and just keep doing that over and over again. And then it translates, the beautiful thing, it translates into our daily lives when we start ruminating about a problem that we have or an issue we need to resolve. We wind up, ruminating about this, and those thoughts aren't getting us anywhere. But we catch ourselves then if we're used to letting go, and we say, okay, I'm going to let that go. I'm going to put that into prayer and just not let it captivate my entire day by this chatter in our brains, which can be really gruesome if we let it. Most of us are familiar with that. Can't fall asleep because of the problem we're ruminating over.
Yeah.
Can we talk about some of those techniques? Can we move into
Sure. Yeah. You
that?
know, I might want to just so the main part of, just either centering prayer or contemplative prayer is just sitting still for 12 or 13 minutes. Set a timer so you don't have to keep looking at your watch. You sit up tall. You can lay down. You can use any position, but what I find is when I teach this in retreat work, I let people lay down, do whatever, and every single time someone will fall asleep. So yes, we may need sleep, but if you really want to practice the prayer, you might want to sit up tall, feet flat on the floor, and just begin breathing through your nose. The other thing that neuroscience teaches us is that breathing through our nostrils is actually better for our brain health than breathing through our mouth. It's also better for our physical health too. That can be another time I can talk about that. But just sitting, and what maybe right now we could just do a little 1 minute, 2 minute sit. Just sitting up tall, closing your eyes, bringing your attention to your breath, and recognizing that the word breath is the same as the word spirit in many religions. In Christianity, and Judaism, the word ruah or pneuma is all, and spirare, those are all words meaning both breath and spirit. So as we sit, think about just breathing in God's love, and when you exhale, resting in God's peace. A very simple meditation. You can just play that over and over in your mind. I'm sitting in God's love, and I'm resting in God's peace as you exhale. So let's just go for like a minute here. Everyone sit up tall, have your chin parallel to the ground, close your eyes, and just think about resting here in God's presence, breathing in through your nose, and then exhaling, resting in God's peace. Start the minute now. And then you can just open your eyes. So that was just 1 minute. And what I recommend for people who may find it daunting to sit for 12 or 13 minutes at a time, just maybe set your alarm 2 minutes ahead of time and sit for 2 minutes for the week. And maybe next week, sit for three. And just see if you can expand that time and maybe do it twice a day for 2 minutes. It just seems to be an easy way to kind of work our way up to the 12 or 13 minutes. And what I think you'll find is that your longing for the silence will increase, and longing for just being in God's presence and just breathing and being grateful for your breath and for life and for the gifts we have. And I know that all of us are struggling perhaps with something, but those are the moments when we can just sit and let go of those difficulties and just be in God's presence, wrapped in God's love.
Great. I just want to give time. a quick disclaimer first, because when I edit this show and this will be heard, is that I'm not going to leave a minute of airtime on the radio. So those of you that have been listening on 94.5, you probably only got a 5 second minute, so that people don't think that there's nothing on the air at that moment. So if you're listening to the podcast, hit pause, count your minute, and then come back and we'll pick it up right here.
Great. Good idea. As I first said that, I thought, oh man, the radio people are going to think something went wrong.
Yeah,
that's right. Yeah. Did we go off the air?
Yeah.
I'm going to throw a song out here. It wasn't on our original list that came to me. Stevie Wonder's Have a Talk with God. Have you heard that song? Stevie Wonder.
I have not, but I'm going to have to. Yeah.
Awesome.
It's a great song. It's have a talk with God. Yeah. Having a talk.
Right.
With something like that. Yeah. It's really cool.
All right. So that's what we'll play. You're listening to Living Real on Nashville's Hippie Radio 94.5. Our guest is Ann Kurtz-Kernighan. We're talking about spirituality and neuroscience. We'll be right back.
We can't feature this particular song from our broadcast on our podcast, but there's a link to it in this episode's description. Thanks for listening to Living Real.
Imagine the clutter in your home gone. Imagine no longer needing a junk drawer. Imagine everything put away in its place. Imagine your home totally organized. Let the professionals at Closets by Design organize your home, office, or garage. They're experts in space management and specialize in maximizing the space that you already have, whether it's your closet, office, pantry, or garage. No space is too big or too small. Call locally owned Closets by Design for your free in-home, no-obligation consultation. Find out how you can save 40% off their everyday low prices and get free installation. Call 615-261-8700. That's 615-261-8700. Or online at closetsbydesign.com.
Welcome back to Living Real Radio. John Angotti here with Greg Walton. And today we have Ann Kurtz-Kernighan with us from Pittsburgh. We're living around Pittsburgh, but she is with us today to talk about her book. And she does many other things. And so we just had a bit of contemplation, a practice that we did in this first segment. And so now we're going to go a little deeper into the history of how we got to this point.
Because a lot of people, you know, don't realize that meditation is a, you know, part of our Christian history from the very beginnings. And you mentioned a little bit about that.
Yeah, we have such a rich history of luminaries from, you know, starting with Jesus, who talk about sitting in God's presence and being still, letting go of our thoughts. And somehow it got lost. And then, you know, after maybe the 15th century or so, we wind up seeing, or maybe even a little bit later, but then we wind up seeing this just gap of nothing. And then Thomas Merton in the late 50s, early 1960s, he was a Cistercian monk living in Kentucky, and he recovered the Desert Fathers and Mothers teachings. And those were people who left the city life and fled to the Egyptian desert in the 4th century. And they were there for about 200 years. There were groups of men and women, about half and half. And they found that deep interior silent prayer was the best way that they could really stay close to God. And they believed that, sure, solitude can be found anywhere, but it's much more difficult in the hurry and noise of life in the city. And so they felt like that retreating from into the desert from that life would allow them to really sit and be mindful of their interior silence. And the Desert Mothers talked about trying to be meditative throughout one's day, even through the days of washing dishes and washing clothes, etc. Teresa of Avila, now she was not until later on in the 15th century, but she talks about the Lord living among the pots and pans. Just think of that, the Lord living among the pots and pans, that even in our, you know, daily chores of washing dishes and washing clothes and folding laundry and watering plants and anything, you know, dusting and vacuuming, even in those mundane activities, God can be found. And our awareness grows. Thomas Merton talks about this, that he says, you know, awareness is at the heart of the Christian life. And the only way we can develop that awareness is through developing this still sense, this contemplative stance. And but he says, too, there's kind of a misnomer that contemplation just means you're just going to be sitting still for 24 hours or whenever you're awake. And he says, no, what contemplation does is it generates a gentle spirit and sends us back out into the world to serve others, that it is not fully a spiritual life unless that contemplation sends us out into the arms of the world, is his quote exactly, that we need to go back into the world and bringing those, that stillness, that's a gift to others. You know, one of the gifts that comes from sitting still is this sense that we become better listeners. We become better at being still with others and giving them that quiet gift so that their voice can be heard as well. So it's really a, you know, the sitting still, generating what Julian of Norwich said was our life is a life of prayer. And she also said that, you know, we should rest in the goodness of God, for that goodness reaches to the depths of our needs. She was also famously quoted as saying, all shall be well, and all shall be well, and all manner of things shall be well. Kind of a sense of, you know, no matter what we're facing, God's still with us and all will be well. And, you know, we remember that Julian lived during the Black Plague. 2/3 of the people in her area were killed by the plague. We don't really know too much about her life. People, scholars speculate that perhaps she was married with children and they were all killed due to the Black Plague. But she sat in her cell and just welcomed people to come talk to her and kind of unburden themselves so that she could be a beacon of God's love. Because she said, you know, we see God in all of life, no matter what that life is. You know, John of the Cross has this wonderful quote. Now, he was a great friend of Teresa of Avila, but he has this beautiful quote about what we should be doing with prayer. He says, you know, every day we should take about, he says that even in the rush of life, that he said we need to make sure that we have time to sit and just keep letting go of things, letting go of all of our thoughts. Francis de Sales also said that half an hour of meditation is essential every day. However, if your day is really busy, you're going to need an hour, which I think is lovely, funny advice, but I'm sorry I don't really, I'm sorry I don't follow that advice very often. I should.
Finding times for silence these days is hard for folks. It's not, it doesn't seem like it's part of our nature, but it's something that I personally long for. Once you experience, you're like, oh yeah, I'm missing this.
Yes. Yeah. And I think your word longing is absolutely correct, John. We do long for that. You know, we long for just a moment to breathe. We long for just, having that space, because so much comes at us through 24-hour news cycles. You know, these folks who lived in the 13th, 14th, 15th, 16th centuries did not have the internet and Facebook and Instagram and all these exterior prompts coming at us, and news and voices all the time. And it really takes a discipline. I think about what the monks have in their lives is they have limited choices. So sometimes what we need to do is just simply minimize our choices, put your phone in another room, shut your computer down, and just be. Because if we have a phone, even within, many of the neuroscientists talk about that, if there's just a phone on the landscape of our vision, on the horizon, that already is distracting to us, even if it's not pinging, if it's not ringing. But just having that, seeing that phone there, makes our attention span, our concentration go down. So putting it somewhere else is also helpful. And then just trying to limit choices, limit things like, closing browsers down in our computer. There's so many different techniques. I have a chapter in my book about distraction and technology, and there are lots of tips in that chapter just about trying to eliminate all the distractions. It doesn't mean we can't be on Facebook or Instagram or whatever else, but it just means maybe being more thoughtful about choosing when we will do that and not having it a free-for-all all day long.
That brings to mind, when you hear stories about people who have less, or you go to countries where they don't have the stuff and everybody seems happier.
Yes. Yes.
Because they have less choices. Their choices are limited, where those who have many choices to do many things seem to be less happy.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah, and there's a World Happiness Report that comes out. In fact, I was just listening to one of the founders of that the other day on a podcast. And those countries that have, less wealth, like you said, some are, but also just less coming at them all day long. It doesn't mean that we want to go back to the, pre-industrial age, and we're all, getting our own crops together and no electricity, et cetera. We don't want to go back there, but it's just being thoughtful, because, the other thing that science is realizing is that all these distractions is impacting our brains in so many deleterious ways that, Florida just enacted a controversial legislation saying that children should not be on social media until they're somewhere in their teens. And I have 6 grandchildren. The oldest is 11. And I'm concerned about her brain health, because we know that these phones are not going to be good for our kids' brains. One of our daughters lived in California for several years working for Google, her husband with YouTube, and their neighbors, who wound up being founders of all sorts of different media companies, social media, they didn't allow their children to have any phones at all because they knew how bad they were for their brains. So the people who are creating that know how bad this is for children's health. So we need to be, very thoughtful about how we use them, and I think this will be something that we hear about more and more in the future. But the good news is meditation can help us retrain our brains and be better.
Yeah, that's very interesting. And I like that study, and I like that rule.
Because,
a lot of things, you're influenced by what you see,
And you see issues, with teen mental health is as bad as it's ever been. And a lot of that is due to social media use. And, the other thing is just learning to be with other people. One of the best things we can do for our mental health is to have social connection. It's so important. And, churches, cultivating groups for teenagers can be one of the very, very best things we can do for their mental health, is to bring them together and have them see each other face to face, being in one another's presence. We know that people who go to church are healthier. There's a big Harvard study that showed that those who are churchgoers are healthier. And a lot of it has to do with our prayer life, our ability to rely on each other and God. And we also know that just our being with one another the things we say to one another. There's a neuroscientist, Lisa Feldman Barrett, who talks about this. The words that we say to one another actually impact the glucose levels in our bodies, impacts our oxytocin, the feel-good hormone. So if we say something good to another person, they feel better. We know this. When people compliment us, we feel like we even have more energy. It's because it does affect the glucose in our bodies. So give people compliments, receive them gently and graciously. And we know that just the opposite, by saying mean things to people, will affect them in bad ways and will cause their health to be worse. Mm.
Wow.
You mentioned in our first segment before the song about a certain type of scan, right? That technology that
yes.
you, what, yeah, what was it called again?
It's the fMRI machine. So it's functional magnetic resonance imaging. And what it, I don't want to get too in depth in what it does, but it
no,
just
No, please do, because I'm a geek.
Oh,
so
okay.
We have geeks that listen.
Okay. Okay, so it measures a difference in blood flow. And so what they can tell is, for instance, if they put a monk into the fMRI machine, and they do this experiment with monks who have been meditating for a long time, and then people who may not be meditators at all. And right before they're scanning their brains the whole time this experiment's going on. So, for instance, they may get a heat shock to their wrist, but they give them a bell 10 seconds before the heat shock. And they watch to see what goes on in people's brains and see where the blood flow is. So when they ring the bell for the non-meditators, their brains already start lighting up as though the pain is already happening. So 10 seconds before they even get that painful shock on their wrist, their brains are lighting up. And it's just analogous to when we know we have to have perhaps a tough discussion with someone, a conversation, and we already get nervous, our heart rate starts to go up, our palms might get sweaty. This might happen because we're already anticipating the stressful event. But for the monks, nothing happens when that bell rings. But as soon as the shock happens, yes, they register the shock. But what monks wind up doing is that they also don't latch on to this pain. They let it go. And so as soon as that, you know, that pain is gone, they've let it go. Other people hang on to the pain. And this is why hospitals all across the U.S. teach what's called MBSR, mindfulness-based stress reduction, because they know that people who live in chronic pain, it's often that their brains are so used to being on for pain and looking for pain, that, and pain is really not only physical, but it's also psychological. It doesn't mean that you're not feeling the pain. You are feeling it, but it is based in brain issues as well as others. So as well as physical. So what we want to do is train our brains to just be aware of that instant of whatever's happening and not anticipating. So I tell people this, it's kind of crazy, but I have to get colonoscopies regularly because our family has colon cancer in it. And I just use this technique. I do not get any anesthesia. And I just watch the scan, talk to the doctor, because what I do is, because of my years of meditating, I can just put that pain kind of in a box over here and just let the procedure happen, and it doesn't affect me. And I don't flinch or anything, because, you know, you just practice this for so long that you learn, you train your body not to react to what's coming. But it doesn't mean that I don't feel the pain, but I'm just not reacting to it. So that's something that meditation really teaches us, is to respond to issues and not react. Because the prefrontal cortex is what's right behind our forehead, and that's where our executive functioning lies, our emotional regulation, our planning, etc. And the more we strengthen that, the less our amygdala, which is our fight and flight center, the less that reacts, so that when something happens to us, we can then respond graciously instead of like reacting in a way or saying things that we wish we hadn't. The more we strengthen the bonds between our prefrontal cortex and other, you know, those pathways and other areas of our brain, we can just be more calm when things go awry in our lives. And so that's one of the main blessings of meditation too, is that those pathways are strengthened.
Mm. Wow. The leaders of the world need to do that, because
yeah, I know.
You know, we live yes. in a world where everything's about retaliation. Instead of really thinking through, what would be the correct response
Right.
for a better world.
And, it's Dr. Richie Davidson is the preeminent neuroscientist who studies contemplation. And he says that we should think about meditation like we do brushing our teeth. You know, a couple hundred years ago, nobody brushed their teeth, but then people said, this is really good for our hygiene. We should do this. So we all spend a few minutes a day brushing our teeth. He said, isn't our brain more important than our teeth? And shouldn't we be, in a sense, nurturing our brain cells by meditation a few minutes a day? Isn't that more important than even the health of our teeth? Maybe dentists might object to that, but certainly maybe they wouldn't. But just spending these few minutes every day could allow the whole world to be more mentally healthy.
I actually look forward. I have a 2-minute timer on my toothbrush, and I got one of those nice Philips things, and I just
Nice.
Sit down, and it's like 2 minutes of doing nothing,
Right,
so,
right. Yeah.
We have to be still sometimes, Greg.
We do. We have to be still. And that's a good setup for a song we got here. This is by Barbara Bridge. I think we've played this before, but it ties so well into our conversation, Be Still and Know That I Am God. And it plays off of that subtraction prayer. That's what I call it. I don't know if that's the right terminology for it. Be still and know that I am God. Be still and know. Be still. Be. So here's Be Still and Know, Barbara Bridge on Living Real. Our guest is Ann Kurtz-Kernighan. We're talking about neuroscience and spirituality. This is Living Real on Nashville's Hippie Radio 94.5, made possible by Closets by Design. We'll be right back.
Imagine the clutter in your home gone. Imagine no longer needing a junk drawer. Imagine everything put away in its place. Imagine your home totally organized.
Let the professionals at Closets by Design organize your home, office, or garage. They're experts in space management and specialize in maximizing the space that you already have, whether it's your closet, office, pantry, or garage. No space is too big or too small. Call locally owned Closets by Design for your free in-home, no-obligation consultation. Find out how you can save 40% off their everyday low prices and get free installation. Call 615-261-8700. That's 615-261-8700. Or online at closetsbydesign.com.
Welcome back to Living Real Radio. Greg Walton here with John Angotti, and our guest is Ann Kurtz-Kernian. We're talking about neuroscience and spirituality the importance of stillness. So we just listened to Be Still and Know, Barbara Bridge. John, you were saying something on the break and about.
Yeah, just today has helped me out just so much when I was thinking about things like, you know, what I do in my life, not just musically, but liturgically, dealing with relationships with other people and how often, you know, we become reactive, you know, instantly retaliate and all that kind of stuff. But to even think of things like, you know, in the liturgy, to be conscious, you know, to go in with the contempt. And so I thought to myself, you know what, maybe before we start Mass this weekend, I'm going to put people through that breathing exercise before we even begin the opening song, because like our church documents say, people need to be predisposed before they enter into the worship to receive the effects of what worship is to do. But I'd say 98% of the people aren't there yet. You know, we're just coming in, people are late, we're moving around, you know, but that to begin with that in that place would change the encounter at Mass where God speaks back.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And I think it, we think about people coming to the Mass, you know, we don't know what they brought into the church with them, what issues and struggles, and even just trying to find a parking place. And, I mean, really just like little things like that. And they're irritated because they didn't find one closer or whatever. And just giving them that minute or two of, let's just pause for a moment and realize where we are, bringing our attention right here to God's church, you know, God's space, one another, our community, you know, just get bringing that little bit of space. And it only takes a little bit of time. It only takes a tiny speck of time, as these teachers tell us, you know, to come into that moment. I begin every single retreat, every single day, we always start with a moment or two of silence, because again, with any time we're gathering, any church meeting, it doesn't even have to be Mass, but even any, you know, parish council meeting or whatever committee you're on, just starting with, let's all just take a breather. I have a friend who's a music teacher at a public school, and because of his learning about meditation, he begins every single choir practice with 1 minute. These high school kids rushing around have their phones. He makes them put their phones in a basket in the front of the room, and for 1 to 2 minutes, he has them breathe. Now, he can't do it in a religious way because it's a public school, but he says that when he forgets to do that, the kids stop him and say, Mr. Schmick, let's do our minute. And he said they always sound better when they start like that too. If they don't and they're hurried, they're not grounded. They're not grounded. So even in less religious areas, we can use these techniques.
I think every businessman listening, if anybody's out there, that's the way to start, because it crosses the boundaries between, you know, the secular and the sacred world, you know, brings it all into one, because all of us have to breathe. We can't escape the fact the secular and the sacred can't escape the reality of breathing.
Exactly.
I had an interesting experience too with silence. You know, a lot of churches, especially that use, you know, praise and worship regularly, you know, one, you just fill up that entire time like it's one big mashup or medley, you know. And I didn't do that, you know. So I remember being at a Baptist youth camp. They had me in as their worship leader, you know, for the weekend. And when I finished the song, I would just stop, you know, and switch my capo and just very just but just give it a lot of space and then turn the page. I had kids walking up to me who had never experienced silence like that, you know, kind of between, and they're like, gosh, I really like that, you know, because we just never take a break. And yeah, so it plays an important part. At least that was a confirmation to me about the importance of silence.
You know? Yeah, yeah. And, you know, when you think about, at least I think about my own growing up, there was plenty of silence. I wandered the woods in around my house where I was growing up. I loved playing in the trees. That doesn't happen as much for children anymore. And so bringing that gift to their lives, it could be life-changing for them to feel that nurturing sense of God's presence all the time. And one thing that I teach too regularly is that we have to have little cues in our life to remember this. So I talk about linking maybe a little action you do every day, like even just turning on the light switch. So every time you turn on a light switch, you remind yourself that God is with you. Take a deep breath or two. Or Thomas Merton talks about opening and closing doors. Every time you open a door, it could be to your car, to your cupboard, to the restroom, anything. Anytime you're opening a door, pause and just take a deep breath and recognize that you are in God's presence. You know, it's just little things. And only choose one. Don't try to choose so many because then you wind up, it's too many and you forget. So just choose one thing you do. I sometimes choose just what we have a two-story house and I walk up and down the steps fairly regularly. And so I just talk about maybe just using those steps as my meditation, going slowly, one foot after the other, walking up the steps. And that's my little minute of meditation throughout the day. And that can just continue to, again, generate that calm, that sense of stillness that we know is a real gift that we have available to us if we only choose to see it and use it.
Mm. That's wonderful. So, Ann, let's, as we wind up here, give us a couple things. One, where we can people get the book, the name of the book. And then I want to talk about the cards that are wonderful. Mm-hmm. Because earlier you talked about how this leads to thoughtfulness. And, you know, I could see, you know, your path of life that led you to do these cards because they're thoughtful.
Yeah. So my book, my second book was published by Loyola Press a few years ago, and it's called Spiritual Practices for the Brain. And in it, there are 12 chapters. Each one has a different practice, such as gratitude or compassion and service or community and relationships. I mentioned one of it is just about distraction and technology. I talk about leisure and play and nature and awe. Nature's a big avenue for generating awe and just appreciating God's creation. But also, you know, being in nature is one of the best things we can do for our mental health. We know that doctors across the United States actually prescribe going into nature to help for depression and anxiety. So that's another one of the chapters. So you can get the book anywhere you find books. You can find Spiritual Practices for the Brain. It won several awards for the combination of spirituality and health a couple of years ago. I was proud of that because I poured a lot of myself into the book, and Loyola Press was dear about nominating me for those. And then, you know, 40 something years ago, I started my greeting card company, Cards by Ann. And that the mission of my company is really to spread affirmation, inspiration, encouragement to people through the small cards that we produce. And I do all the calligraphy and artwork by hand. They get reproduced. We sell them in stores around the United States. In fact, I think there's one in Nashville called St. Mary's. They carry them, but also cardsbyann.com. We have a website and we send out cards every single day. But we have over 300 or 400 different cards, birthday, all the sacraments, lots of Christmas, Easter, you know, First Communion, Confirmation, anything you can imagine. We pretty much have all those types of cards available, and we keep them. And we only use 100% recycled paper because I try to make sure we keep those trees, as many trees as we can, alive.
That's wonderful.
There's the environmental engineer coming out.
There you go. Yeah. Comes full circle, you know.
Yeah. Well, we really appreciate it. We hope this will be the first of multiple conversations, because this is something, you know, that it's easy to forget. And so, you know, we need to be reminded on a regular basis. So we will definitely have you back again to inspire us and keep us, you know, give us better mental health, because the world's crazy.
Yeah. And, you know, just remember, it's just those, start with 2 minutes. Just start with 2 minutes and go on from there. Start small.
Start small. Okay, Greg, anything else from St. Philip?
Well, you know, we got Cowboys and Cupcakes happening next week. Clay Walker is a big fundraiser, yeah, for our learning center, but also it benefits some relief and development stuff. It's open to the whole community. So that's Thursday. Is that the 25th? Yeah, Thursday, 25th. April 25th. And it starts at 5:30 p.m. So tickets are available on our website for that. And if you just want to know more about St. Philip, to go to stphilipfranklin.com.
Yeah. And also, if anybody's out there, we're starting our Play It Forward camp this summer, and we're taking registrations now. So we are working on that. You can check that out. We'll talk about that on another show. But
thank you. Thank you, Ann, for being on with us on Living Real.
It was really a joy. I'm so excited always to share these life-changing practices that nurture our spiritual lives, but also keep us healthy in mind and body.
Everybody needs a little bit of silence in their life, some sacred silence, don't you think, Greg?
Yes, we do. And that's a great cue to go out with Tom Booth and Jenny Pixler, their piece, Sacred Silence.
Well, Anne, why don't you close us with a prayer, and then we'll end with Sacred Silence.
Very good. I invite everyone to, again, sit up straight and close your eyes. God of all creation, we thank you so much for the gift of this life, for the gift of breath, that every breath we take is a reminder that your spirit comes into us to inspire us and to renew us. May we be motivated to now sit with you in silence each day to nurture our souls, nurture our connections with one another, and nurture our growing love for you, your word. And we thank you so much for all you have given us. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
Amen. So go out and smile at somebody. You've been listening to Living Real Radio on Hippie Radio 94.5. Have a great day.
Sacred silence, holy ocean, gentle water washing over me. Help me listen, Holy Spirit, come and speak to me. God, my Father, Christ, my brother, Holy Spirit, sanctifying me. Lord, I'm sorry, please forgive me. Come and set. Gentle Mother, God's pure vessel praying for me. Saints and angels all in heaven, come and be with me. Sacred silence, holy ocean, gentle water washing over me.
You've been listening to Living Real Radio, real issues in real time with your host, John Angotti and Greg Walton. Be sure to tune in every Sunday at 8 a.m. to Living Real Radio. Living Real Radio, brought to you by Closets by Design. Imagine your home totally organized. Call them today for a free in-home consultation at 615-261-8700. That's 615-261-8700.